And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard our Friday John Gambling Show at 77 WABC with Mr. Michael Bloomberg. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. And even though we did have a lot of rain last night, I'm happy to report the forecast says we're going to stop heading towards that 40 days and 40 night record. Today, weather perfect. Weather's going to be fantastic for tonight's Yankees-Mets game at Yankee Stadium. And the forecast for tomorrow is great. Sunday, we'll see.
All right. Well, it's going to be beautiful. 4th of July, it doesn't matter what happens.
Let us pray. I mean, I have seen fireworks in the rain, but it is an awful lot nicer if you have good weather.
I actually
weather.
Watched fireworks in a fog once, and it was bizarre to watch them disappear.
On the East River, I remember a few years ago, it disappears right into the clouds. Yeah.
It was pretty bizarre. Speaking of the rain, upstate New Jersey, really bad situation.
Bad situation, and people have died. A couple of people I'm still missing. We sent up police, fire, sanitation, Office of Emergency Management. I mean, every city agency that could help is helping with equipment and that sort of thing. We have some mutual agreements. For example, if there's a fire, fire department automatically can back up the next community. But some of the stuff that they have to ask and or we volunteer. And right away, the Office of Emergency Management and the Department of Environmental Protection, which is the city agency that controls all our dams. You know, without those dams that we have, some of it would be a lot worse. But still, no dams are built to contain this amount of water. It's been really quite unique.
Yeah, and it's interesting that there is that mutual help situation going on. Hurricane evacuation plan talked about in the newspapers again this week. You and I talked about 3 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah.
Way ahead of this curve.
Joe Bruno pulled together a great plan, and it really involves lots of different people and some things that somebody said, "Did you learn anything from Katrina?" I don't know if we would have done it without it, the terrible experience that they had down there. But what you saw in New Orleans. People didn't know that they had to evacuate. We've got a plan to make sure everybody knows. People didn't have a ways to evacuate. We've got a plan to make sure we can provide transportation. People didn't know where to go. And when they got there, there was no facilities for them. We've taken care of that, I think. And we have lots of volunteers from other than police and fire and corrections, all of whom will have their jobs to do. But we need volunteers to man the shelters. And it's fundamentally a multi-pronged plan. We study the storms. You can tell a long time in advance whether they're coming. You're never sure they're going to hit. And we may, in fact, evacuate a lot of people and then have the storm not hit. But I'd rather be criticized for that than the reverse, obviously. And you will be criticized, after all. We should have known which way the storm was going.
Of course you should.
Absolutely. But we will keep informing people. And then, the police department, the fire department will be knocking on every door, going to every hospital, going to every seniors' home. We've go to the seniors' homes and hospitals
now. That was
now.
The tragedy down in New Orleans.
We're not going to make that mistake. We will. And if people don't want to leave, I'll sign an executive order, which we've done all the legal research we have a right to do. The same ways, if you are out on the streets.
You can actually pull people out of their house
if you are out on the streets in the winter and the temperature goes below 32 degrees, we have a right to move you into a shelter to protect you, even if you don't want to be protected. It's a similar situation here. And yes, and we will hopefully accommodate people's pets and that sort of thing. I think virtually very few people are so stubborn that they'll say, "Oh, I want to stand here in the middle of a flood or a storm." The thing that could hurt us the worst is a storm that hits central New Jersey as opposed to hitting central Long Island. I mean, it's terrible for central New Jersey and terrible for central Long Island.
There in Nassau County.
Right. But for New York City, which is what our plan deals with, the worst is if it hits central New Jersey because that sends the storm surge up the bay. It's called the New York Bight. And it's if you take a look, the fundamentally Jersey coast runs north and south. Long Island runs east and west, and in the middle is the New York, the bay. And as you know, use your left hand, point it down if it's a low low pressure, and your fingers will show you the direction of the winds. If it's high pressure, point it up. It'll show you which direction the winds are going. If it strikes central New Jersey, low pressure area, which is what a hurricane is, send an enormous amount of water up the bay, and it's flooding that will do the damage in New York City. There'll be some wind damage, there always is, but it's relatively minor. It's flooding, and it's just, it comes in, it does the damage, and then it's not like New Orleans. New Orleans, the geography is the water got in and couldn't get out. Here, the water goes in, and it would go out again. If the storm struck out on Long Island, the winds would be in the other, you'd be on the other side of the storm, and you wouldn't have much flooding because the waters would be pulled out of the bay rather than into the bay.
Boy, you've really got you up to speed on this one.
Well, you had to learn that stuff, you know. Don't you remember from high school?
Absolutely, and boating
stuff.
And all of that.
Anyways,
and
we've got you know, we've got food and water and blankets, and we want to make sure we spread it around. So you go to these centers first. You call 311. You go to these centers, or we'll take you to these centers. Then they'll send you to the shelters themselves. We've coordinated with the local, with the other contiguous counties, and. Everybody's got a job, and they know what to do, and they're well-trained. And keep in mind, we've never had, I don't think, a Category 4 storm hit New York. The likelihood of a Category 2 or 3 is very negligible. Category 1's a little more likely, but that's not a big – that's just like a big storm. Last night I sat outside for a little while – under a thing, looking at the storm, and the amount of rain and the wind and the lightning was quite something.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. When we come back, we're going to talk about being prepared. Are we overprepared? And what about the terror money? Looks like Washington, in their infinite wisdom, is going to have less on the table for next year. The mayor will comment. We'll be right back at 77 WABC. Together with you, me, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. You were down in Washington talking about security and dollars and cents a week 10 days ago. And here this morning I read the Senate has voted to cut the terror funding by $20 million for next year.
Well, you know, we've yelled and screamed at Chertoff and the Department of Homeland Security, but Congress, in its infinite wisdom, wants to spend its money elsewhere. You know, I have said that I will not make a fuss if we don't get any agriculture money in New York City. But because we shouldn't get agriculture money. We don't have agriculture in New York City. Likewise, nobody else should make a fuss if the Homeland Security money that's risk-based comes to New York City. That's where the risk is, and a handful of other cities as well.
Let's talk about risk for just a second. I thought an interesting article in today's New York Times, Clive Haberman, who writes about New York City on a regular basis for the Metro section, talks about New York City and the barricades, the large concrete structures that are in front of buildings, the fact that there's a law being passed to open up the Statue of Liberty again, including the crown. Have we maybe fortified ourselves? He's talking about fortifications. Should we back off from some of these fortifications?
Well,
from a psychological
point of view. My first deputy mayor, Patty Harris, has been leading a crusade with buildings to, at least if they're going to put barriers outside, don't make them those ugly, long pieces of cement. Make them flower pots or an interesting set of poles or posts or whatever. You can have good design and still have have functionality, right? Have security in this case. I don't know. It's the only ways you would ever damage a building is you bring a truck bomb, and the closer you get. Now, it's not going to make a lot of difference if you have to be out in the street rather than up on the sidewalk, but it makes some. Clive Haberman talked about, this was an article in the Times. Talked about the fact we live in a litigious society, and you could get sued if you don't have it. And somebody says, "Oh, well, he wouldn't worry about it." Yeah, well, it's not his money. Whoever he quoted, it's a lot of buildings do it, and
they're not ordered to do it by the city.
They're certainly not ordered to do it. They do it voluntarily. Whether they have to have a license or not, I don't know. You know, I think we have to be very careful that we don't let the terrorists win without firing a shot. Hunkering down, staying in our homes, building big barriers, not being willing to host events and that sort of thing, I couldn't agree more. We should not go in that direction. There are natural risks you just got to run. On the other hand, putting up flower pots around your building that also act as a deterrent, I don't know there's any great harm. The Statue of Liberty, I don't know what that's gotten more PR. It's made for people who want to have press conferences, elected officials, and yell and scream. Truth of the matter is, I remember as a kid, you could go up to the crown. You couldn't go up to the torch by the time I was a kid. I mean, it was originally built. I think it could do that. What the Park Service said, and I don't know why they need the aggravation, but they said, look, you know, in an emergency, the stairs are very narrow. You can't get people in and out. So they closed it down, but let you go into the base.
Freedom Tower redesigned, at least another iteration.
That makes some sense. My standards are, in this case, the police department had to sign off on the design. I said to Ray Kelly, I want you to tell me whether or not with this design or any of these designs, would you let your child work in that building? And when he says yes, I said, okay. That's as good a measure. I mean, I don't know if he's right or wrong, but at least you get comfort that he really believes. That's a good test as any. If all of us look in the mirror, are you willing to do it? Don't tell me what you want others to do. Are you willing to do it? He's willing to do it. That's okay with me. And I think the Freedom Tower, you know, it is an icon. There are whether or not it really is a target, I'm sort of skeptical, but there clearly are people who are worried about that. And so if people are worried about it, you have to go and assuage their fears. And the design of this, there's probably never been a building in the world built to these safety standards. I got a full briefing from David Childs, the architect, who's a brilliant guy. And they're using materials that will protect people in the buildings and outside the building. It's a magnificent structure, great design.
So a lot was learned from 9/11 from a building safety point of view.
Oh, yes. I think there's no question about that. Could we have learned it less expensively without that tragedy? Perhaps. But the real world is it's tragedies that get us to focus on issues that otherwise we don't get around to. That's just natural human reaction. Shouldn't be, perhaps, but is.
This week there was an article and controversy. We talked about it right here on this program about the listing of the names at whatever memorial ultimately gets built.
Incidentally, I'll talk about that. But, you know, I just remembered, if you read the papers today, we listen to these criticisms of Governor Pataki and the Freedom Tower. Maybe it'd be nice if somebody said something nice to him today. He just got a tenant for a quarter of it, and he's working on customs, and he's working on others. This is a building that will get built, and it will get filled. And, you know, it just... people don't have any patience, or maybe they just want to write something controversial or say something not terribly intelligent and controversial. These things all take time. We will work through this with the insurance company. Some of the insurance companies already have said we're going to pay. A couple of others may fight, and we'll sue them if we have to. I hope not. But Pataki is getting this done probably as fast as anybody could, and he deserves credit for it. And he'll leave office with a legacy. I don't think anybody else could have done it any better. I think anybody there would have had all of the bad press. You know, everybody says, I understand it takes time. I want it done right. But where is it? And, you know, you can't have it.
To the listing of the names, a controversy. You and the governor have said just a listing of the names, either randomly or alphabetically. Some of the families of the victims have said, we want it designated floor, business, age, tower, specific to that, and they say this is a non-negotiable situation, which I'm not quite sure what that means,
because I don't know what
they're negotiating. But your reaction?
The original design that was selected by the committee with this public process picked Michael his design. I think it was the best one. I think they made the right choice. Part of his concept was that you list all the names randomly without any designations as to floor or title or company or building or anything else, to show the fact that we are all equal. And the only compromise I thought should have been made in that, and said so at the time, and I think the governor and I had agreed to do this, as I remember. It's been so long ago. For those who went into the building, the first responders, just put up the shield of their department. There was court officers, Port Authority Police, New York City Police, and New York Fire Department. And I thought that slight variation really said something, because it will tell future generations those were people who went in to effect the largest evacuation ever and saved 25,000 lives. Other than that, I thought Michael's design was exactly the right one. There are people who want to make this into something else, and I think the right answer there may be the ways it's done. For example, I think the Vietnam Memorial does exactly the following. You list everybody without any titles, and then you have a book where in
they
the book—
They've listed by years, by the years,
in the case, wars. In the case of their chronological, here everybody died the same time, so you wouldn't do that.
Right.
But I think a book would be a nice solution to the problem, where it identifies, you can have a biography, who you were, what you did, what your title was, who you worked for, where you were in the building, whether you made anything anybody wants to put in it, that's fine. I don't think it's appropriate if you start thinking about what it would look like, and not that you don't want that. It just would be so complex, and it's not clear, do you want to be next to your sibling or with your fellow workers, because it may have been in different places. And if you have titles for one group, do you have titles for another group? There's no easy answer here other than to do what I think we should do, is what Michael
Interesting, your idea designed there about a book. You could do it electronically in a kiosk.
Oh, you can do it in a kiosk. You can do it over the web. You can do it in a book which you sell at the memorial site. And that would give the people that want that what they want. At the same time, I don't think if you really think about it, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years from now, I don't think you want...
Or even 100 years from
now. Or 100 years from now. Having companies and floors and age and titles, it just... It isn't what this is about. This was about human beings. And all human beings, I think, should be treated equal. You certainly... I don't have a problem in designating those that came into the building to save others. But I think that they also should be mixed in with all of the other names, because they were human beings. We're all human beings.
You and I have ended up on the same page on that one.
Well, that's good. That means you're right.
Well, exactly so. Yeah. But I will tell you, it was very controversial. The phones, I mean, it was all over the place. The fire department wanted theirs, as you can well understand. We got to take a break. There's more with Michael Bloomberg as we continue at 77 WABC. All right, here we go. My name's John Gambling. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is with me and you at 77 WABC. A story from one of your deputy mayors, Kevin Sheekey, this week, suggesting that if certain things, the moons line up in a certain way, that you might actually think about running for the presidency.
You know, I took that yesterday to mean that he wanted to run, and I gave him a ringing endorsement at my daily press conference.
Not just a ringing.
I said he'd be great. I'd be happy to endorse him and support him for president. And this morning, we at our daily staff meeting, he said thank you for the endorsement. He was tickled pink. He didn't say he was, and he did not say that he's not running, which I keep saying I'm not running, but Kevin Sheekey didn't say he wasn't running.
Oh, these stories keep popping up, Mr. Mayor.
It is very flattering, but the truth of the matter is I will finish out my 3.5 more years with having the best job in the world, and then run the foundation.
The over and under on this is changing by the week. You know that.
Well, you know, when somebody writes these articles, I send them to my mother. I think she probably gets a smile on her face, but she basically, when I talk to her, says, get back to work and don't let it go to your head.
Okay.
But what is really seriously the most, the thing that puts the biggest smile on my face is, you know, you walk down the streets, and I take the subway every day, and I try to talk to people. I do town meetings to continue. I'm trying to do as many parades, if not more, and town meetings as many now as I've always done. I want to do my second term. I don't want anybody to ever say that I didn't work as hard as I did in my first term. And people seem happy. Not everybody. It's New York, but you know.
No, I think, I mean, the callers that we get here, the callers that I talk to during the week, I think that that's absolutely right. I think New York feels very good about
itself. There is a journalist listening to this right now who I guarantee you will write a story tomorrow. He will go out, he'll ask 1,000 people till he finds one person that's not happy.
That hates you.
That'll be the headline. You got to.
Well, actually, there were a few people that aren't happy with you, and they showed it this week. That has to do with the rent control boards and the rents that were levied.
If I understand, well, number one, there is this independent group which was set up many years before me because the elected officials didn't want to get involved. They didn't want to hear it. There's no win situation here. This board looks at the expenses of landlords and the public's ability to pay, and they come up with increases that are allowed. These are rent-stabilized, maybe rent control as well, but certainly rent-stabilized buildings for 1 year and 2 year leases. If both sides scream bloody murder, they've probably got it right, and that's the case here. But the evidence is that fuel costs and taxes and all these other things increase the landlords' prices by 7 to 8%, and the suggested rent increase or the ordered rent increase was about half of that.
What do you think about rent stabilization, rent control? I mean, people from out of New York City scratch their head and don't understand.
Rent control isn't an issue anymore because slowly things do get decontrolled, and there are very few left in the grand scheme of things. It used to be hundreds of thousands. Today, it's probably less than 50,000.
We all know stories about people who make lots of money living in a $300 a month.
There really are those, but they are few and far between the grand scheme of things. Not that it's fair or anything else, but rent stabilization is the big thing. And free market absolutists say it's a bad idea. And my inclination is that you shouldn't try to fool around with the marketplace. However, all of the studies seem to show that it has not hurt construction because along with agreeing to build new construction that will be rent stabilized, you get some tax breaks from the city. And landlords or builders, developers, when they do the analysis, say that's a good deal. They'll make that deal. It's good. You know, they do it in their own free will. It is painful when rent-stabilized apartments become unstabilized, uncontrolled, because there is a process that after these, once it gets above a certain level, and the people that live there scream bloody murder, and rightly so in the sense that their rents are going up dramatically. On the other hand, somebody else could argue that they've been getting a break all along, and, you know, when the break goes away,
it's time to pay.
Yeah, I mean, be glad you had it before. It's one of these things that you will never win, and the shocking thing is the decorum at these hearings that the Rent Stabilization Board has to have, how anybody can conduct themselves that way. And they just take great pride in trying to disrupt the meeting and keep anybody else from saying anything. There is no...
The vote was actually done in another
room.
Yeah,
I mean, there is no real discussion. Nobody's willing to have it. Maybe there's nothing to say is another possibility. But I think they've done a good job on balance in finding some middle ground. If you don't give reasonable increases, the landlords either... don't maintain their buildings, which is in anybody's interest, and nobody else will come into the system and build.
There seems to be no way out of this, though. I mean, there's no sort of economic way to get away from this.
The problem, the fundamental problem you have in this city is that we have a success story. More people want to live here than we have housing for, and capitalism does work. That's what's putting pressure on rents. And also the costs of things we can't control, particularly fuel, which is something that the federal government should be looking at. Maybe I should talk more about that sometime. But the federal government should be looking at the cost of fuel and how we in this country can afford to heat our buildings and drive our cars and whatever at lower prices and consume. The ways you do that is consume less, more efficiency, or alternative methods or alternative fuels, whatever. But the truth of the matter is we can't control that. And so it's inevitable, as long as those two things are true, that rents are going to go up. What we've got to do is make sure that salaries go up commensurately, if that's possible. Reduce taxes if we can to make more people, more businesses want to stay here.
Are you a believer in the reduction of taxes actually builds the economy and fuels the economy?
I don't think taxes are good for anyone. Having said that, most companies, if you ever talk to a real business person, and to lots of them, that's not the deciding factor as to where they locate their business or whether they expand. Nor is rent the deciding factor. For most companies, it's where are the employees that they need to be successful? Where are their customers? Where is good transportation? And that means you want to have low crime, you want to have better schools, you want to have cultural institutions so that people want to come here, tourists want to come here. Some of our businesses here depend on intellectual capital. So a banking firm, a consulting firm, an insurance firm, those kinds of companies come here because the people that they want to have as employees want to live in an exciting city that's safe and that sort of thing. Then there are companies who are here because this is where the tourists are. They have to service those. It's a variety of things. But, you know, we at this point have brought the unemployment rate down to the lowest level it's been, not since 9/11. This is the lowest level it's been in 18 years. More people are working today than have worked in a couple of decades in this city. So we can't – I know people say taxes are too high, and I would like to reduce taxes if it is possible. But the first and the most important thing, and that's been this administration's policy, we are going to spend whatever it takes to keep people safe. We're going to spend whatever it takes to improve the school system. We're going to spend whatever it takes to do the things that this city should do. What I'm going to focus on and be relentless on and uncompromising on is to do it as efficiently as we possibly can so you know you get your money's worth. But just blindly reducing taxes and saying, well, if the government can't afford it, get the government out of these services. That's what they did, if you think about it, back in the 70s.
Right.
And we fell apart. They cut back services because they didn't have the money and they didn't want to pay any more taxes. And it took decades to come back out of that. And so we're not going to go back to that thing. And I think we do have it right. If you look at the numbers, record employment, the record unemployment, record number of people wanting to live here, record – we're building more affordable housing to house more people than live in Atlanta. The population of this city is going to, in this decade, add more people than live in Pittsburgh. We have problems of success. And you look at other cities, they're in exactly the reverse.
All right, there was another group of people that didn't like you this week, and that's people up on the Upper East Side near the garbage depot that you want to build.
It's not a garbage depot. No, it's a waste
transfer station.
Thank you very much. That's the terminology. Look, the truth of the matter is
go somewhere, right?
John, we generate 22,000 tons of solid waste a day in this city. It's got to go someplace. And the fairness issue is, I think, very compelling. Every borough should take care of its own. No matter where you cite these things, there's some community that doesn't like it. We have a transfer station on the west side we will use. We will use the one on the east side. And and we'll do it in a ways that it's not going to hurt the neighborhood.
All right. We're going to take some phone calls as we do each and every week. 1-800-848-WABC. 1-800-848-WABC. All right. We continue. It's your turn to ask the mayor your questions. 1-800-848-WABC. Going to start with Jackie out in Brooklyn. Hello, Jackie. You got the mayor.
Hi. I live in Dyker Heights, Brooklyn, which is a residential 1-in-2 family area. And we have had rampant illegal conversions of these 1-in-2 family homes into many cubicles. These homes have been reported. The inspectors do come to the homes. No one will answer the door. And they have come multiple times. We have illegal basement apartments. These are fire hazards. I don't want to see any more firefighters killed because of all these illegal conversions. And I would like to know if the mayor can do something to help us, perhaps get warrants to get into these homes.
Jackie, you are 100% right that there are a lot of these in this city. There are estimates of a few a couple hundred thousand people living in illegal conversions, number one. Number two, Jackie, you are exactly right. They are fire hazards. God forbid there is a fire. People couldn't get out. There's just too many people. I mean, they're just...
Those firemen that had to jump off the top of the building.
Yeah, there was an illegal change in that building. I don't know. That wasn't exactly what Jackie's talking about. But these are people that take their basement and convert it and rent it out to people who just get a bed. The problem is that we have trouble gaining access. The good news, Jackie, I'm glad to hear that the Department of Buildings, the Buildings Department comes out there. We try, we knock on the door, we leave a notice, we go to court. Judges won't give us a warrant to enter buildings unless we can really show for sure that there are illegal conversions in that building, which is hard to do until you get in. It is a problem that has gone on for a long time. It has bedeviled the building department. Patricia Lancaster, the commissioner, has been working very hard on it. There's some in Brooklyn. Queens is probably has even more. It's, once again, a reflection of people wanting to live here and not enough housing supply. If you went in, let's assume the courts would let you do this. Go in every place of conversion and just close them all down. You'd have a few hundred thousand people who wouldn't have a place to sleep. So, you know, it's one of these problems that had they attacked it at the beginning intelligently, you wouldn't have much of a problem. Once the problem gets so big, it's very hard to find a solution.
By letting it go, though, don't we just allow it to grow even larger?
Yes.
Okay.
And then as soon as you come up with a solution that the courts will allow us. I mean, we know what to do, but unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, unfortunately for all of us, the courts have some say over this, and they'll only let us do a certain
amount. All right. With Jackie, thank you. Where are we going next?
Well, let's go up to the Bronx. Frank.
Frank in the Bronx. It's your turn with the mayor. Go ahead. What's your question?
Mr. Mayor, you bring to mind Tip O'Neill's great biography where I feel like when he said he met Ronald Reagan, as much as he was totally opposed to his policies, he couldn't help but like the man. You seem like such a gentleman, such a refined, likable man. However,
Frank, I like you. Even if you're about to say something that I disagree
however
with. Yeah, I know that.
Policy, Mr. Mayor, and you as a true gentleman, but school supervisors, 3 years without a contract, being an educator, you just said yourself, we need to give raises to keep up with
Frank,
the cost of living.
I think we have a couple small unions we're about to settle with. This is the only union in the city we have been just totally unable to come up come up with a contract. The head of the union has never, I don't think, ever showed up to a negotiating session, and she complains. As a matter of fact, there's nothing, when a school does well, and the principals and assistant principals and all of the administrators in the school really deserve a lot of credit, the head of the union goes out and starts tearing them apart and says it isn't true, that they didn't do a good job. I've never seen anything like it. Somebody who wants to destroy the very people that they're trying to negotiate, they're trying to represent, and never negotiates. And we've been trying to come up with a contract for so long, and it's mind-boggling. Nobody can quite understand why every other union's
been able
to...
So the city's ready. The city's ready to do it.
We've come up with a contract with every other group. I think there's two other unions which we're close to we're getting very close to. But at least they've been talking. This is a union that doesn't talk. They, no matter what you do, they run to the newspapers, have a press conference, and criticize. Maybe you can understand. It doesn't make any sense to me why, if you want something from somebody, you criticize them. I've never thought that was a smart – and nobody that does that is very intelligent. But they then criticize their own members for doing a good job. It's just mind-boggling. Frank, talk to the union. We are doing everything we can. We're not going to give away the store. The CSA is going to get a contract consistent with all of the other contracts for every other union in this city. And there's nobody that is. We've gotten the teachers a 33% raise over the last 4.5 years. I said my number one commitment was to education. We've come through with the money. Here's a union that represents people who I think are the most important. I've given this lecture 1,000 times. You want to have great leadership, and in education, we call those assistant principals and principals, and we have these training programs. We recruit new ones. I build them up every chance I get. They've done a spectacular job, most of them. Those principals that aren't doing a good job, we're going to replace them. The school system's not run for the employees of the school system. It's run for the kids. That's the difference between now and before we came into office and got control of the school system. But this is just craziness. It goes on and on and on.
All right, Frank, thanks for the question. Where are we going to go next, Mr. Mayor?
Let's go to Staten Island,
Victoria. Hello, Victoria. We've got short on time. We'll get right to the question, please.
All right. My question for the mayor is, and I also agree with the caller that just called before. I think he's absolutely right about you. We just got 38 officers out of a class of 1,200. My question is, how can the city address public safety when there's a fine attached, but otherwise it doesn't want to address public safety?
Victoria, Staten Island, I'll give you quick numbers before we run out of time. There's 245 cities in this country that have 100,000 population or more. When they rank them highest crime to lowest crime, New York is 20th from the bottom, which is where you want to be. You can't find a safer city. Only 20 cities out of the 245. If Staten Island were a separate city, it'd be 246. It is very safe, and we keep focusing on it. We have enormous resources devoted to Staten Island, Victoria. We're going to make sure that every part of this city gets the kind of protection. We're focusing right now on fireworks, which last year got out of control, and we just don't want anybody to get hurt. We're going to enforce the law. We are building or siting a new precinct house in Staten Island. We have very good command structure there, dedicated police officers. And, Staten Island, unfortunately, Victoria, there will always be some crime, no matter how hard we work. But I don't think that Staten Island or any of the other four boroughs is going to escape Ray Kelly's attention, mine, or any of the 40,000 police officers.
I understand it's the 4th of July weekend. You're going to be opening up the pools. And
I'm going to Red Hook to open a pool, and everybody's waiting to see whether I jump in the pool with the kids. I will not have my wallet, shoes, watch on. I will be there in a T-shirt and my running shorts. What do you think?
My guess is you probably won't jump in with the kid.
We'll have to wait and see, John.
Hey, listen, we're going to miss next week. I'm taking it off for the holiday, and we'll see you in a couple
weeks. I'll be working, though.
I know you will.
God bless. Have a great time.
You too. Happy 4th of July, Mr. Mayor. Stick around. Chris Wallace will join us. So will you.